Now, this is something that I guarantee every football fan has done, and I also guarantee it has led to a heated debate or two. And this is imagining how things might have been if, let's say, a brilliant footballer had been born in a different era, or if your club hadn't sold your star player, or maybe hadn't bought the player that made a real difference to your team. Or what about if the rules of football were slightly different, or that referee that got it wrong had actually got it right? Well, Peter Prickett and Peter Thornton have joined forces to try and reach some conclusions about what might have happened in some, should we describe them as reimagined scenarios. The result is a new book called Moments That Could Have Changed Football Forever, What If? And we can speak to both of them now. Hello, Peter and Peter.
Good evening.
Good evening, Emma.
Hello. Am I going to have to call you Mr. Prickett and Mr. Thornton? Is one a Peter and one a Pete?
I call Peter PP. So you could try that.
So PP and PT is the way
that's
to go.
That's the one, yeah, that's good.
Okay, so which of you started this? Because this started with a tweet, didn't it? Is that right? As all things do, I'm assuming, in the 21st century.
Well, we sort of, yeah, we got together on Twitter because of our love on coaching, but I'm sure Peter will back me up. What is funny is, I know it sounds a bit of a cliche, but we genuinely both had the idea, perhaps in a slightly different format, but we both had the idea. And Peter tweeted something, and the minute I saw it, I went, oh, listen. And that's how it started.
Okay, so that tweet, what was the particular kind of catalyst?
Go on, Peter.
Well, I was perusing Twitter, as I tend to, and I noticed your classic Ronaldo and Messi argument, who's better? And I just went, can't we just enjoy them both? Instead of wasting your energy discussing who's better, why not use that energy thinking about something different? Like, what if they played together? And that turned into a short blog post. And that's when Peter T contacted me and went, we need to write this book. Because immediately the replies were just carnage, just people rowing as they had them. It's like discussion. It's like, yeah, we need to do this.
What I love about the book, as you say, it's in chapters of that start with a what if. And what you do is you kind of start off with part one, the reality. And then part two, as you say, is this flight of fancy. You say, okay, what would happen if? And one of those, which, as you say, I'm sure would be particularly popular with many fans. First of all, there's this discussion about who's best, Messi or Ronaldo. And do we all agree it's Messi?
Yeah, I do.
Good, excellent.
Yeah, we do.
So there we go. That's one chat. That's one thing we don't have to worry about. But you have to. So the two of you, and I don't know if you agree, but did it help that that it required two brains at least to do this? Do you think one of you could have done this without bouncing off the other one?
No, I think it really helped because it gave us like a leveling and a bar, and it certainly helped us to sort of pick the moments, if you like, the what ifs that might appeal to everyone. You know, some of the things that you've picked out. We never looked at just what if, you know, someone had scored that goal, what had happened next. It was always something that had a knock-on effect. And Peter will tell you, you know, we often ring each other up, and luckily we can easily spend an hour and a half on the phone just discussing stuff because we tend to be on the same page in terms of like coaching and the way we look at the game of football. But it was nice to have someone to echo against and reflect against.
With the Messi Ronaldo chapter, for example, you have to think that they're going to play in the same team. So what if they play together? So you decide that they're going to play for Barcelona or Real Madrid?
I decided it would be Barcelona.
Yeah.
Because there would have been windows within Ronaldo's career that he could have theoretically been signed by Barcelona. Whereas with Messi, as we've seen, he's stayed there for a very long time until the goings on at Barcelona interfered with that stay. So yeah, we settled on, instead of him going to Manchester United, Ronaldo goes to Barcelona. So we have a very young Ronaldo and a young Messi playing together.
And how do they do together? Because as you say, you're both coaches. So what I find really interesting among the other things about this book is you're literally going, you're thinking about the positions that they're going to be on a pitch, the pass that they're going to make to a particular player in a particular match. You've got it set up like, you know, like sort of you've played these matches. You've got Messi and Ronaldo playing alongside each other on some kind of, you know, in some kind of fantasy football world.
Yeah, I think one of the joys is trying to work out how they would dovetail together. And Peter wrote that chapter, and I think he did it, you know, exceptionally well. I'm sure he'll outline how he did it.
Yeah, unsurprisingly, they do rather well together, as Barcelona were doing quite well at the time. But it's not, so the interest to me is, you know, I think most people will say, well, of course they can make it work. But what then happens? Because we saw Ronaldo with Bale and Benzema working together well, and then Messi with the Neymar Suarez partnership, but those relationships couldn't last. So at what point do they go their separate ways? Do they fall out? What happens? Because we've seen Messi see off a number of players who've been signed to play alongside him, and we've seen Ronaldo essentially have small drops on the pitch.
So whose ego wins?
Ego would win?
That was it.
and who's getting the Ballon d'Or out of the two of them over the course of those years? Who's missing out on goals that the other one's scoring?
I think the way I've gone at it, I think that Messi will dominate the Ballon d'Ors until Ronaldo goes. Once they're no longer playing in the same team, we'll have the same rivalry that we saw just at a slightly later period in their careers.
Another chapter that I absolutely loved, the scenario Pep Guardiola as a League Two manager. And this is a real flight of fancy, because you create a club, you create a team, you think about the players that he's going to have to be dealing with as well. How long did it take for you to come up with this Pep Guardiola and League Two world?
Yeah, I think it's something that is always levelled at Pep, you know, in any social media. I think I start the chapter by saying, you know, he divides opinion. It's people see him just as a checkbook manager. But I think we both agree that ultimately he's such a tremendous coach. And I think at different levels, you've seen him work with the players that he has. So I was lucky enough to get some real insight from the vice chairman of a lower division club into what the budgets would be for him to be able to build his squad and to build his backroom team.
Which he's not allowed all of, is he, of course?
No, that's right. That's right. It's quite funny because the vice chairman said to me, he said, you usually get to pick between a goalkeeping coach or a second analyst.
Right, okay.
And so that big entourage, doesn't
he? I was going to say, Pep's staff is significantly reduced.
Yes, absolutely. But yeah, no, and then it was fun. And to be fair, I think we both had a look at how, you know, because the big thing that many fans miss is that Pep started off, you know, once he'd finished, he went round the globe trying to pick up different styles of coaching.
Before he an absolute student of the game, wasn't he?
Yes,
in particular, Bielsa was somebody he brainly picked. Yeah.
And then, you know, he started off with Barcelona's B team. So the way that he operated there, we tried to mirror some of the things that actually happened and then apply them to our fictional team, Old Dale, which was a nice amalgam of Rochdale and Oldham that we thought might work. And then we just sort of put it together and played fantasy football with it. And it was real fun because I think, you know, we I'd like to believe we got quite close to what we think might happen.
Yeah, well, spoiler alert. Well, not exactly spoiler alert, because you do leave us on a cliff edge, I think.
Yes, that was, yeah. That was, yeah. We had a discussion about that, the pair of us, and we thought that would be a nice way to finish it, rather than saying, you know, he didn't succeed, or, you know, he did succeed. To leave it like that would be a nice ending, because it continues the debate, and I think that's what, as you picked up on, that's what the book's about. It's about football fans talking.
Because, as you say, you start that chapter by saying that he does divide football fans, because I think a lot of us from the outside looking in will kind of look at clubs that have a huge amount of money to spend and think, well, I could manage that team. That's easy. Yeah. But could he do it on any... I don't think he can initially, can he? On a wet Tuesday night in Grimsby?
No, without spoilers. I think that's how we set it up, that he starts to have problems. But as Peter is a much better coach than I am, and, you know, it's about problem solving. And I think all coaches, once they sort of start the season, it is about solving the problems that they are before them. And you'll see in that chapter the way that we go about thinking how Pep would solve the problems that he comes up against. You know, and that was quite fun to try and see how he would do that.
Another one of the chapters is a lot of little reminders to, I think, a lot of football fans about those players that they almost signed.
Yes.
So, and that is so many football fans, especially kind of later on when you find out how close maybe Arsenal were to signing a particular player or whatever. So those are quite fun to kind of just think about those players that clubs just missed out on. So can you think of some examples that you highlighted?
Oh, there's some crazy ones going on in there, which is literally what we called it. What if these crazy transfers actually happen?
Yeah.
But the biggest one is the headline. What if Maradona signs for Sheffield United? So when Ardiles and Villa come to England in 78, Sheffield United were very close to signing a 17-year-old Diego Maradona. And it didn't quite come through. Imagine what football would have been like had Maradona been playing in the English leagues. You know, you see the what happened in Spain with him, and the amount of chaos he caused on and off, well, mainly on the pitch at that time. And then with the Falklands situation, which caused so many issues for Diaz and Villa themselves, one could only imagine that Maradona would have been in a similar scenario, with every single moment that he does on the pitch being under the microscope.
Maradona at Sheffield United, Yes, go ahead.
No, there's one of the things I was going to say, Emma, is the incongruous nature of some of those transfers. So there's one that, what if Zidane signs for Blackburn? And one of the joys of doing the research for the book was we found some brilliant quotes, and Peter found a wonderful quote from Jack Walker where he said, "Why would we want to sign Zidane when we have Tim Sherwood?" Which really should go on a plaque.
I was going to say that's probably at the very least on a T-shirt somewhere. Why,
yeah,
indeed?
I mean, you know, it was. You know, those quotes that we found, and football is brilliant for those quotes, and I think sometimes within the book, it's those that bring those situations alive. And as you say, with those transfers, you know, I think it's one of those things, as you pointed out, every single fan will have, you know, a transfer where they go, if we'd have just signed a centre-half, then we would have won the league. You know, there's all that thing about the time when Arsene Wenger just kept on signing midfield players, you know, when a blind man on a galloping horse could say that, you know, could see that all they needed was a couple of centre-halves, you know.
Who didn't get injured immediately, which was always the other problem with Arsenal. I mean, talking about top players, I think another discussion, I keep returning to the pub, I think, when I suggest that these conversations are being had. But yes, because that's probably my life, but there we go, is if there was a brilliant player who was available at a different era. And you choose Tom Finney to look at. Why is that? Just because it seems that, I guess, everybody that spoke about him just spoke about what a wonderful, wonderful player he was.
Yeah, I first came across Tom Finney. I worked on the opening of the National Football Museum 12 years ago. It's been open 12 years now, and did a lot of research on Tom. And as you say, it is the reverence that people like Shankly and Mercer and Busby have for Tom Finney. And we found a wonderful clip of Bobby Charlton talking about making his debut for England against Scotland. And you expected him to talk about, you know, the glory of it and his journey. And he said, "I couldn't believe I'd be walking out with Tom Finney." So it was that was the basis of it, that here was the one English player that everyone who has an opinion in football, but, you know, real opinions, like those top managers and top players, everyone held him in such a regard that we felt he would be the one player that if we could, you know, put him in a time capsule and move him, he would be the one player we'd pick. And we did that.
And you put him into England teams who, in fairness to those managers in the teams that you put him in, didn't do particularly badly, but might have done better with him as part of a team. So he's either born in 1972 or he's born in 1992.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was the fun element, was to try and look at situations where he would have actually made the difference. Because, you know, there's a couple of chapters in the book where we look, you know, what Peter does a great chapter on what if England had built a team around Glenn Hoddle.
Why didn't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, is a great debate in itself. But with Tom, we talked long and hard, Peter, didn't we, about where you'd actually drop him, where you go, oh, if he'd had just played there, England would have had a really good chance of winning either a World Cup or a European Championship. You know, so yeah, Tom playing in 1990.
Well, with Hoddle, it was fairly obvious. He plays in central midfield. You build a team all around him. And he's the main man. But with Finney, because he plays not on the periphery, but out in the wide positions or through the middle or behind the striker, he would have played an important part for a team. Whatever area you pick, he could have played a really major role for them.
Well, I think we win the Euros and we get to a World Cup final in the scenarios. the fantastic. Terry Venables is knighted. All sorts of things happen.
Why would he not be, old Terry? What a star he was.
The clubs that the two of you support, who are you fans of?
You can go first.
Oh.
No, it's a wonderful thing because I've been supporting Manchester City since November the 9th, 1968. And then we started having lots of big discussions, I think, the hour and a half on the telephone. Peter supports Liverpool. So it was just at that point when Liverpool and City sort of developed this rivalry at the top of the league and in Europe, etc. And it sort of dovetailed nicely, didn't it, Peter, that bit?
Yeah, I think that was proof that we could discuss ideas in a calm and sensible way, because we didn't, even when the two teams were about to clash, there was no arguing, no ill will, no bad words. So we knew we could work together.
Yeah, I think what we'd like to think is that there's an objectivity to the book. And ultimately, as you've said, you pointed out, you know, we're students of the game, but we both love the game, I think, the game of football. You know, I'd openly say I love the game of football probably more than I love Manchester City, because, you know, football had me at a low when I was about six.
Yes, no, I appreciate you have been through the bad times as well as some rather good times recently. It actually reminds me of, I was asking in the office about football what ifs, and Josh, my producer this evening, says a popular one is, what if Steven Gerrard hadn't slipped? And I think it leads to Jurgen Klopp not being the Liverpool manager. Are you aware of that scenario?
That very, very nearly got into the book.
And right.
We avoided some fairly obvious ones because of of that. What happens if Steven Gerrard doesn't slip? Well, they probably win the title. Brendan Rodgers stays for a while. Klopp doesn't go to Liverpool. He could end up at any number of large clubs. There's your what if answered. And there's other similar ones where it's like the moment that just tells you, well, they won the league, or, well, they wouldn't have been relegated, or so on. So we tried to go for ones that had a bit more depth and complexity, we hope, anyway.
I didn't get as far as there are chapters about rules possibly changing, no offside rule, and what if referees got things right? Now, that is a can of worms to open, isn't it?
Yeah, it was just some lovely scenarios, aren't they? I think my favourite out of all of those is the Sol Campbell for England, where Sol scores two vital goals. If you ever watch the footage, one gets disallowed against Portugal, and I forget the other one off the top of my head. That's it, against Argentina. And in both cases, Sol doesn't do any of the infringing. And even dispassionately, if you look at the footage, how on earth the goals are disallowed. And poor Sol had two. So, yeah, that was fun, looking at what if the referee got it right, what could have happened. Again, England, I think England go on and win a World Cup. Or
of course they do. Because, I mean, a popular what if is the Frank Lampard goal that isn't. And I always kind of thought that Germany would beat England anyway, but a lot of people sort of argue that goal's given, it completely changes the kind of feel of that match.
Yeah. My argument was very much they still lose. England still lose that game because England weren't great, and that was a very, very good up-and-coming German side. But Peter T argues this himself, if that goal is given, the picture on technology looks very, very different, because that goal was such high profile, it seemed to drive a lot of the move towards change.
Yeah, we think that is the one moment where FIFA looked at things and went, do you know what, technology needs to come in, you know. And it's the one bit of technology that we both like is the goal line technology, because you get an immediate response. And, you know, without putting any spoilers in, neither of us are big fans of VAR.
You're
which
not
is
right.
A book in itself.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, you say a book in itself, but I'm just wondering what happens next, because at the moment, as I'm sure you're aware, lots of speculation as far as London fans are concerned, in particular about where Declan Rice will be playing his football next season. It seems it will definitely not be at West Ham, but where will it be? And what happens to Harry Kane next? I'm wondering if those scenarios are already being kind of spun around in your heads.
I think Harry Kane's a good one, isn't it, Peter? We've chatted about Harry a couple of times, haven't we?
Yeah,
does he stay at Tottenham and try to become the Premier League's top scorer, or does he end up playing in Europe somewhere and winning a trophy?
There's big echoes of Alan Shearer, aren't there? Where Shearer essentially chose a type of glory over trophies, and if Harry Kane stays at Spurs, he's doing the same thing. Over guaranteed trophies, Spurs might win some trophies, who knows. But whoever he goes, it's going to be a club that is definitely going to be challenging for trophies, in the biggest available trophies at a club level. So that's his choice. Does he have the glory of scoring all of these goals and records, and maybe look back and have a look at his a League Cup trophy? Or does he go elsewhere and pick up a couple of Champions League medals? We don't know what's in Harry Kane's head, but I think that's basically the choice that he has to make.
I was going to say, one of the things that we think is, you know, interesting, and certainly be good for football in Manchester, if Kane went to Manchester United, so that you'd have Haaland on one side and Kane on the other. I think it, you know, that might be something that helps United do even better.
Right, perhaps not as interesting if it was Haaland and Mbappe.
Yeah,
What
not quite as interesting, no.
if that happened?
Another what if for your sequel is, what if the Middle East didn't have so much money?
Yes, well, yeah, we have chatted long and hard about this already, haven't we? You know, the sort of the mirrors of when all the players at the end of their career starting trotting off to America, you know, and some of
Yeah.
them still do
And
now.
we were thinking a bit in the office talking about China being where
Yes,
players were going
China.
for a little while, but now it seems they're all heading off to Saudi Arabia,
And
isn't it?
even before that, they attempted a Super League out in Colombia, which attracted a lot of big talents. So historically, it looks like these attempts have a brief burst but then don't follow through. We'll see what happens,
The
but
one that
that
worried
seems
us, Peter,
to
wasn't
be
it, was
happening.
Neves. You know, Ruben Neves at 26, you'd think he's at his peak. If players that age start going, I think that would be a worry. But it's still the pull of the Premier League, isn't it? The Premier League is still the most watched league in the world at the minute. So, so long as that carries on, hopefully the Saudi money won't talk as loudly.
Do you think there is a sequel to be had? There are still plenty of conversations, I'm sure.
Oh,
Lots of
yes.
scenarios that you had in your mind that didn't make it into the book this time.
Yeah, I think, Peter, I think we've got a list. The next time we actually get together face to face, I think we've got a current list of about 40 what
Yeah, I think
ifs.
it's about 40.
And
But it
then we
might
want to
not be
try
a
and
question
whittle
for
them down.
us. Yeah, it might be more of a question for our publisher than for us, but we'll see.
Well, I can't imagine this not being popular, because it's great fun to just sort of pick up and look through a chapter and, remind yourself of a moment in footballing history and sort of reimagining what might have happened next.
Sure.
Or to kind of think about, as you say, a great player playing in a different team, or great teams playing against each other again, something that so many fans will have spoken about. What if that brilliant team had played against that brilliant team? It's something that every football fan, I'm sure, will kind of engage with and have an interest in. I'm sure you saw a few of the what ifs. I think that Daniel Wynn, of course, a Tottenham fan, was wondering what would have happened if Liverpool hadn't scored that rather dodgy goal in retrospect, very early in the Champions League final against
Of
Tottenham. Who
course,
knows?
my answer is they'd probably still go on and win the game, but there come some biases. Pete might have a different opinion on that.
No, I think that's one of the things we were looking at, Emma. You know, those things where, you know, what if that goal was disallowed or whatever, Liverpool don't get the penalty. It's still a one-dimensional. Either way, you know, you can say, oh, Tottenham would have won or Liverpool has won. But whereas, as you pointed out, the what ifs that we have a like a depth to it where you
Yeah.
go, oh yeah, that wouldn't have happened. And then, you know, even the Gerrard one that you've just highlighted that may well go in the second book. You know, it turns out Klopp, doesn't finish up as manager of Liverpool. It isn't just that Gerrard slips, and those are the things that we like looking at.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the Eric Cantona chapter being a good
Oh, what's that?
example of that. He doesn't retire. No Teddy Sheringham. No Roy Keane as captain. Manchester United do not win the treble. And you're saying that as Liverpool and Man City fans, yeah?
No Dwight York either.
No
No
Dwight
Dwight
York.
York
Oh,
there either.
okay.
Yeah.
I can see lots of problems with that. Yes, but you still get.
The great debate, though, isn't it, Emma, is that United fans could come on and who would disagree with them and go, well, if Eric hadn't have retired, we would have won the treble a year earlier. And that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Peter and Peter Prickett, Peter Thornton, thank you very much. A pleasure to speak to you. And thank you for sort of putting this down in black and white. And it will be a book I'm sure a lot of people will enjoy, even if occasionally they're tempted to chuck it at a wall. Just in
Well, it's been a
frustration
pleasure.
at what might have been for their football club. And as you say, you've got 40 plus scenarios to come if the publisher is keen to, for part two and part three.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Lovely to speak to both of you this evening. Moments that could have changed football forever. What if? Barely scratched the surface of the what if scenarios that the two Peters investigated as part of that book. As I say, a sort of topic that so many of us think about, that moment in your club's history where you wonder about the player that you might have signed or the decision that an owner made to sell at a certain time, or maybe the a club moving from one place to another and the difference that make. I think we were talking in the office today about sort of West London and what might have happened in terms of, you know, Fulham and Chelsea and Queen's Park Rangers and Brentford and all sorts of scenarios that might have been that didn't. But definitely a book that you can dip into, and I'm sure that a lot of you will identify with a lot of the questions that are being asked and are attempted to be answered by the two Peters in the book. Available in all good bookshops and some bad ones, as they say. Thank you to both Peters for speaking to me this evening. As I say, asking for your sort of what if scenarios. That sort of what if Liverpool hadn't scored very early in that Champions League final, and also a series of what ifs that we had throughout the course of the day from Michael Butcher as well. What if Dennis Bergkamp had never signed for Arsenal? What if Arsene Wenger had never signed for Arsenal? Who's Arsene Wenger? Of course, remember David Dean signing him and the difference that he made, not just for Arsenal as a football club, but for English football sort of in its entirety, really. I think just banning tomato ketchup among one of the differences that he made as far as English football was concerned. But really fun book to just dip into and to just think about those moments. You know, what if Jimmy Greaves hadn't been injured in 1966, lots of what ifs, and a really fun book if you get the opportunity to check it out.